Hi, I'm Gloria Moraga. This is One-on-One, Communications in the Digital Age, and perhaps Communications in the Virus Age, because we are struggling to defeat COVID-19. And we are doing it, and we can pitch together and do this. So I'm going to be conducting a series of interviews from home. I had the pleasure of talking remotely to Dr. Celeste Roseberry McKibben. And she is a professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at California State University, Sacramento. And she is the author of a best-selling book called Love, Talk, Read. And you can find her on Instagram at Love, Talk, Read, and her website, lovetalkread.com. And she is just a gem of a woman and just has some valuable things to tell us as we deal with the virus.
You've had a varied life. You've traveled, and tell me about the story that you told on Facebook that was so compelling.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity. Well, I was born in Southern California, and then my father was a minister, so they quickly had three more children. My parents had four girls in 3 years. The last two were twins. And my dad was a pastor making $300 a month for a family of six. So we left for the Philippines when I was just turning six. And so I lived there from ages 6 to 17. My parents were Baptist missionaries. And I came back to live in the States permanently when I was a 17-year-old college freshman. So we lived on various islands of the Philippines. We lived on Luzon, which is the main island, but we mainly spent our time in the middle of the Philippines, the Visayan Islands. So when I was in third grade, we were living on the tiny island of Tablas, and I was 8 years old, going to school there in the Filipino school. So we had this really great life, but one of the things that you really learn about the Philippines is there's a lot of natural disasters, Gloria. I mean, all the time. If it's not a fire, it's a tsunami or an earthquake or a volcanic eruption. So lots of typhoons. So here we are living on Tablas in the barrio of Ojongan, and we lived in a coconut grove. There were only dirt roads, and it was about a city block from the beach. So this was a great life until this giant typhoon hit our island. And I remember, again, 8 years old, it was at the night when it was the worst, and the ocean was literally in our house. Wow. And I remember standing there just watching the water rise between my ankles and creeping toward my knees. And there was obviously nowhere to go. And so we just prayed to live. Obviously, God answered our prayer. But when we got up the next day, the island was completely devastated. Neighbors were dead. I'll never forget just walking down and seeing our church and my elementary school were just piles of rubble. Everything was gone. And I'll never forget just the shock of that. It was like my world had crashed in and just turned upside down, as it had for everybody. But at least we were still alive. So anyway, after we kind of absorb the reality, which is a lot for an 8-year-old child, we learned that the Filipinos had this concept. It's called bayanihan, which is community. And natural disasters are so frequent over there that you just, if you're still alive, and that is up and down, if you're still alive, you not only rebuild for yourself, but you look around at your community, your neighbors, your church, your school, and all of you join together to help each other. So that was just absolutely pivotal for me. And it led to a lot of my current projects, like, collecting books for children in poverty, children who've lost everything. But that experience, again, was very profound in terms of influencing my current life and my missions.
Bayanihan,
yes. Yeah, it means sense of community. It means sense of helping each other out, especially during times of difficulty. It's a little hard to translate, but it's community taking care of each other, especially in times of difficulty.
Wow, and that's such a great lesson for right now.
Yeah.
There are people now who are really suffering, and in many ways, I'm worried about the homeless, but also the little ones, You know, they don't know what's going on. They're not going to school. I know my granddaughter is 3 and she doesn't understand why. She was just in preschool for about 6 months. And just,
oh, wow.
Just loves the learning there. And, you know, now she's not going to school. And so, you know, what can you say as just a professor, a teacher, to how we all need to band together during these times and think upward and think good thoughts for each other?
Okay, well, first of all, I think it's important to understand maybe the emotions that come with a time like this. So the first thing is just this tremendous sense of shock where, I don't know about you, Gloria, but I feel like I've been dropped in the middle of a science fiction movie. It's so shocking and so sudden, just like that typhoon. So I think we can be kind to ourselves and those we love by understanding that shock is the number one emotion. And then it's followed by maybe anger, denial, panic, all of that. Those are normal feelings. And I think first and foremost, we have to treat ourselves kindly and let, you know, help ourselves to understand that this is a typical process to go through when a disaster hits. Then once we've kind of had time to process that, hopefully to talk to friends and loved ones virtually, then it's time to really look at our families. And that's, you know, kind of that process. We deal with our own emotions. We deal with our families. We explain as best we can to the little ones what is going on in terms that they can understand. And then once we've done that, I think we can begin to look around at our communities and we can ask ourselves, okay, now that my basic needs are met, how can I help others? So for example, my son Mark is 22. He is a college senior in Washington, D.C. And I was obsessed with getting him home safely. Gloria, I couldn't think of anything else. When he finally landed and was under my own roof, I could draw a sigh of relief, realize we had food in the fridge. And then I was able to kind of start thinking, okay, who is really suffering way more than I am, and how can I help them?
Now that we've got the children underfoot.
Yes.
That's hard. Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, we're all here and no one's leaving. And as a somebody who's semi-retired, but not really, but okay, someone who's working from home, I always loved that time when the house got really quiet.
Yes, yes.
Think and you can write and you can, you know, do all of the creative things that you like doing. Well, it doesn't get really quiet.
No, I know what you mean, Gloria. Like to do deep mental work, I really need a quiet space to be alone. And it's just so true. And I've had so many people, especially women, tell me that. So there's a couple of things. One thing I think realistically is we might have to postpone some of that stuff, which I hate doing, but I know I'm having to really triage. I mean, and I don't have small children either around like you do. I just have my husband and my son. And that, for me, that's a lot. And I'm one of the luckier ones. So I think we have to realistically maybe postpone some of that deep thought work until things settle down. And then I think the next thing is we have to really communicate with each other and try to be flexible. So as an example, my son is trying to study for the law school entrance exam. So we've talked about it, that my husband can't have the TV on loudly all the time, and maybe he needs to use headphones, and maybe Mark needs to move to a quieter part of the house. So I think, Gloria, I say this from a position of blessing, but we can maybe negotiate with family members, even little kids. Hey, grandma needs 15 minutes of quiet space by herself. You know, little kids can understand that. And I think this is maybe a time for helping all of us to learn some boundaries together.
Yeah, boundaries. Boundaries is a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it is. I think we need it.
And if I can just quickly throw this in. So I told my husband, okay, here's your honey-do list. Where would you like me to put it? And he said, well, probably, and I won't repeat what he said, but I kind of realized that I was maybe nagging him a little bit. And I thought, okay, Celeste, there's a boundary here. He knows you have the honey-do list. He knows you want stuff done. Now you've taped it up on the wall. So stop reminding him. So it's learning to process this new normal together.
Yeah, the governor said, oh, you're fine to go for walks, go outside, do this and that. And I said, oh, this is great. We can all weed because we've got weeds, you know, that we need to pull. And it's like everyone just ignored me.
What? Oh, well, you need to make dinner contingent upon that. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's interesting because, Gloria, I don't know about you, but as a parent and a daughter and a wife, I really realize how separate all of our lives have become. And maybe this is a time to start negotiating. Hey, you know, I'll get dinner after you spend 15 minutes helping with the weeds. And maybe a lot of women like us who are used to sort of doing everything for everybody, this might be a chance for us to put our feet down. Just saying.
Yeah, for sure. My daughter, you know, is a working from home. The daycare closed.
That must be so hard.
Oh, it's like she says, "How am I going to do this?" And it's like we're just going to have to come up with a schedule.
Yes, you know, Yeah, Gloria, that's what my son said, because he's gone from being in the dorms at George Washington University, where he's a senior. Now he's just footloose and fancy free. And I said, honey, you need to set a schedule and we need to follow it. So this is old fashioned. A lot of people use their phones, but I got out this giant post-it and hand wrote a schedule and taped it up to the wall. And I said, now's a really good time to learn some self-discipline that, you know, will really be beneficial for ever.
I want to talk to you about reading.
And yeah.
You're the reading queen. So you have written a book and it's a bestseller on Amazon. And tell me the name of the book and where people can get it. But also let's talk about reading to our children right now when we're trapped in the house with them.
This is a book I wrote and called Love Talk Read to Help Your Child Succeed. It's on Amazon, and it's just basically, if you sat down and read it in one fell swoop, it would take you about 45 minutes. And it's just basically for caregivers of young children. It's simple. If you have, you know, 2 minutes to read it, put it down, come back to it. It's meant for the busy caregiver who just needs things in sound bites, if you will. So again, that's available on Amazon, and I'm so grateful for how well it's done and how many people I've been able to help with that. So I've got a Instagram page. It's at Love Talk Read, and on my at Love Talk Read Instagram page, I will be posting a lot of practical ideas for people to work with their children at home. So that's there too. And then my website, lovetalkread.com, also has a lot of ideas. But one of the things I just wanted to share is that when we read with our children, we can just think, okay, care, C-A-R-E, comment, ask questions, respond, and extend. So just care, C-A-R-E. No matter how tired we are, no matter how discombobulated we are, I think that most of us can remember to care. So let's just take a little simple book like this, Frozen, very popular right now. So you're reading along with your child and you are just looking at the book. And so Elsa has been very kind. She's a little icy, but she's warm and fuzzy inside. You can comment. Oh, looks like Olaf feels really happy with Elsa. And then you can ask a question. So who's been really kind to Olaf? So that would be something else to do. And then when the child says something, you can respond, Elsa. Oh, that's right. Elsa has been kind to Olaf. And then, Gloria, the most important thing that I think, and this is the point I really want to make, is that something very easy that all of us can do, no matter how dire our circumstances, no matter what language we speak, is when kids respond, especially little kids, we can extend what they're saying. So for example, the child might say, "That Kristoff," and we can add words. We can say, "Oh yeah, that's with Kristoff and he's with Anna." Or maybe on the next page, "Oh," the child might say, "Sven Reindeer, And yes, Sven is a reindeer and he is with Olaf. So just a simple thing of popping open a book, comment, ask questions, respond, and then extend. When the child says something, we add words to it. We can do that during book reading. We can do that when the child is taking a bath. We can do that while we're in the car, if we can do that, if we're feeding them. So extending is the number one easiest, most powerful, scientifically proven method to help build children's language skills.
Wow, that was great. Thank you so much for that.
Sure.
Yeah, that Olaf.
Right? Yeah, and picking something the kids really like. I don't know if Goodwill stores are open, but you know, there should be hopefully, you know, places to pick up gently used books, Dollar Tree, Goodwill. I know it's very, very cheap, so hopefully that will work out. There's also a lot of books online if people get desperate.
Right.
You know, free resources.
So each year you and your students, you're wonderful students, and you're just such a great teacher and professor. Do a book drive. How's that going?
Oh my gosh, Gloria, thank you for asking. You know me so well. So back in 2008, a student needed the books for her thesis. So I thought, I'll try to get 500. I didn't think I'd even get that. Then my mom died in 2009, relatively young, very suddenly. So I kept up the book drive in her memory. And as of early 2020, we have hit over a quarter of a million books that we've been able to collect and donate in Greater Sacramento and the United States and probably about 41 countries worldwide. So it's just been crazy. I never thought my little idea would go global, but I feel really thankful. And it's all due to my university students in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders. I would never have this without them. So I just collect the books, but they're the ones who bring them, and they're the ones who deserve all the credit.
And you deliver those books out to schools or communities. Where do those books go that the students collect?
Okay, well, that's a good question. So there's two ways. First of all, if the books build up and no one's requesting them, I have a list and it's on my website, lovetalkread.com. But there are very high poverty schools in this greater Sacramento area. So I'll call them up or email them. So for example, Greer Elementary School here in West Sacramento is a wonderful school. Amy Gregory is the principal and they have an ongoing outreach program to families in poverty and apartment complexes. So I'll email Amy and I'll say, hey, I just got 500 new books. Want me to bring them by? And she's like, yeah. So that's a way that I often donate. I do have places. And then the other thing is that students will come to me sometimes and say, hey, Dr. Roseberry, if they're Russian, I'm going to Russia for the summer. Would you give me 50 books for Russian children and orphanages? And so I'll literally put these books in the student's suitcase and she'll bring them to Russia. So I don't have any mailing costs. So those are kind of the ways I dispense them, either by request or by just calling up some of my favorite sources and saying, hey, how you doing? Do you need me to drive a load of books over to your school?
Wow, you are fabulous.
Oh, thank you. I really love what I do.
Yes, you do. You can tell. Lovetalkread.com.
Yes, lovetalkread.com is my website, and then Instagram is at lovetalkread. And I tend to post a lot more on Instagram, to be honest, with ideas and things. But yeah, lovetalkread.com explains the whole mission. So both are there.
Okay. All right. Good. Because we'll just make sure to put all of that information in the information box on YouTube and on the podcast. So anything else that you want to talk about before we say goodbye? I just can't believe how wonderful it is to see you.
Yeah, Gloria, it's great to see you too. We've been friends for quite a while, and I'm just so happy to be with you. And I guess I just want to close by saying that what I learned growing up in the Philippines with all of our typhoons and all the natural disasters is that after we've gotten over the shock and taken care of ourselves, like we talked about, and our families, we can really then, I believe, look for opportunities to reach out to other people who are hurting. And when I'm desperate and fearful and feeling crazy, what really saves my sanity is looking for ways to help other people. And so I just want to encourage us to do that as a way to not just care about our community, but also to feel better. You know, we're all looking to feel better right now. And I think that caring for our communities and our neighbors is a great way to go with that.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom.
Sure. Thank you, Gloria. It's wonderful to see you, sweetie. It's just good luck to you, and hang on tight, because this will not last forever, right?
It will not last forever. It will be over.